Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. We're going to switch to baseball, and we have Shane Dennis with us. Shane is co-host of Sports Daily on KFH, 9 to 11, Monday through Friday. He also does Shocker Baseball on radio and TV. And if you've been preoccupied with basketball through March, we're going to catch up on Shocker Baseball. Shockers are 17-4. They are number 6 in the RPI, so they are off to a really strong start. Heading off on an important road trip this week. They play at Central Arkansas on Tuesday and then at East Carolina over the weekend. Shane, how did the Shockers get here?
Well, as it, you brought up the RPI, and it's kind of a running joke in all sports that the key to a good RPI is win a lot of games, and that's what they've done first and foremost. They're 17-4, and honestly, they are one just okay inning away from being 19-2. They were ahead 7-2 in mid-game against Nebraska in a game that they lost at home, which, by the way, is their only home loss. And the offense didn't show up in a midweek game against Oral Roberts, lost 2-1. So to answer your question more directly, though, it's just been leaning on a lot of veteran position players and having pitchers who were in somewhat different or less significant roles last year really stepped up almost to a man. I'm sure we'll talk about some of those individually, but basically players answering the bell and going out and playing like a veteran group that they are.
Still probably a little early to get too terribly excited about the RPI. That can change pretty dramatically, but they do have some nice wins, beating Oklahoma, and then I saw Oklahoma went swept West Virginia this weekend. They split with Creighton. Creighton's got a good RPI. Took 2 out of 3 from Nebraska. So there's some, I think there's some depth and some solidness to the schools that they've played and some of their wins. When I've seen them, and I haven't seen them a lot, I'm kind of struck with the general overall perception that this team is, more mature. They're solid. They're better defensively. They're not making some of the mistakes that maybe they have over the last two or three years as this team has kind of grown up together. What's your impression kind of in an overall sense?
I would agree with that. I think it's, for the first time in a long time, really tough for underclassmen to crack this starting nine. You can, for the most part, count on 6 or 7 guys to be in one particular spot in the order and one particular spot on the field. You got some interchangeable parts thereafter, but most of them are upperclassmen. Alex Jackson kind of got squeezed out of that, and although he's a sophomore, he played quite a bit last year. So he and Jacob Catsby, a couple of outfield platoon candidates that have kind of had to bide their time just because there's so much experience returning from last year's position players. So yes, they are much more mature. The road is probably the X factor here. They did sweep McNeese State opening weekend, but they haven't played much on the road since then, and they have only won one other game. I think they've got 4 wins on the road. Of course, that's a pretty good departure from last year when they only won 5 all year long. And I think when you take last year and the year before that, they were like 9-42 or something like that on the road, which absolutely has to change if they want to go anywhere this year. But so far, so good. And because of their experience and because of their maturity, like you said, I think that has every bit as much to do with winning ball games because of their mentality as much as it does their physical ability, which has also gotten better as well.
Yeah, that'll be the thing everybody will be looking for. This was a good team at home last year, but the road problems pretty much ruined any chance they had of getting some momentum. Is there a, this is kind of the silly question that sports writers ask, but is there a trick to winning on the road? Is there a certain mentality, or is it just you've just got to be talented and play well?
I think it's between the ears more than anything. And, I saw it up close. I was just as confounded as anybody else why they won so much at home and lost so much on the road. Now, I will say that in Todd Butler's era, you look back at some of these road games, they are against some big-time opponents, and they're not just in the midweek. You're not going down to LSU necessarily and playing just on a Tuesday. You played them Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so you saw their big guns. Same with Texas Tech, same with TCU, Cal Poly, Cal State Fullerton, Arizona State. These are weekend, Louisiana Tech last year, these are weekend series. So it's one thing to go down somewhere and steal a game in the midweek when you've got, you know, four or five or six pitchers that you know are going to pitch, and you happen to pull one out. But really what's hampered this team on the road, I think partially at least, not only immaturity within the last two or three years, but facing some big guns on the weekend. And that's the deck stacked against you pretty good. So I think Todd maybe bit off a little more than he could chew. He wanted to get these guys ready for postseason if it came to that, but it backfired on him. So, you know, some of those big teams are the reason why the road record is what it is over the last couple of years. But now Wichita State is that team with a, you know, chock full of veterans, juniors and seniors. And so the time is now for them. So I think that will certainly tell the tale on how they do well, how well they do this year on the road, because now they're more battle tested, and now, you know, they're the ones with all the veterans.
When you would talk to Todd Butler before this season, in the fall, in February, he would, you know, end every conversation with, you know, it all comes down to pitching, and they've had some really bad fortune in pitching over the last three or four years with some injuries, and pitching's been an issue. It's much improved this year. Let's start with the starters. Let's start with Cody Hoyer, who's been the Friday night guy, been really consistent. What are you seeing from him?
A huge jump, for sure. I mean, he's always had the arm talent, but I think it's just belief in himself. And I think you've already addressed this on the Roundhouse, talking about Cody Hoyer and his and others' decisions to stay here. Stay in Wichita during the summer instead of going out and playing summer ball and working on their bodies, working on their delivery, their mechanics, the monotonous stuff that could kind of stunt you if your attitude wasn't right. But he's had a great attitude, and he and Mike Steele put in the work, and you can see it in his results.
I did address that. Thank you for reading, Shane. You and my mom. I'm slowly building up. Yeah.
But honestly, though, that's to ask an 18 or 19 year old kid to stay around and just work on the side, instead of facing, you know, Cape Cod League hitters or Northwoods League hitters or pick whatever summer college baseball league you want. That's a lot to ask. And frankly, I was skeptical. Are these guys going to be able to make that big of a jump? When you talk about Hoyer, Sanborn, McGinnis, Barnhouse, Lungwitz, to some degree, all those guys have made quantum leaps, and that's without facing anyone in the summer. I was as big a guy, an advocate of going out and learning how to pitch or learning the things that you don't already know on your own in the summertime. But Mike Steele has made these guys, you know, you hear this all the time, trust the process. And so far, you can't argue with the results. I'm surprised, and I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, pitchers pitch. Baseball players play in the summer, so it is a little bit of a unique circumstance. And I think Mike has addressed that in the past. I think there were people who were curious about it, who weren't totally sold. But at this point, yeah, it turns out to be a really good decision. I watched Liam Eddy on Saturday against Furman. I texted you. Tim Kelly was the name that came to mind. You said more A.J. Ladwig. He's just really fun to watch from the standpoint. He's throwing strikes. He's working quickly. Sports writers love that because you get those games over in a reasonable amount of time. And he's just a freshman. Unflappable is the word I hear about Liam Eddy. Give us your perspective on him.
Just what I was going to say. It seems like he's been doing this his whole life. For a freshman to be penciled in to the starting rotation from the beginning is uncommon, certainly at Wichita State, but virtually anywhere you look around, you're counting on, let's get past Cody Hoyer for a second, you're counting on him to be the number one guy, and you look at his numbers last year and you kind of shake your head a little bit, but you bring in a true freshman to be the Saturday starter. So it's not like he's the midweek starter, the number four starter. The Saturday game is pretty important, and he's only had really one hiccup. He had a game against Creighton in Omaha where he just didn't look like himself, but the rest of the other five, I think, starts that he's had, absolutely couldn't ask for anything more from him. And, yeah, you're right, he is unflappable. He throws the ball over the plate. He's not afraid of contact. He knows his defense is out there to help him, and that's uncommon for an 18-year-old. A lot of those guys coming out of high school are blow away 16, 17, 18 strikeouts a game kinds of guys. And once you get to college, you feel like you need to miss bats. But he's not that way, and the results speak for themselves for him. And, you know, the upperclassmen could learn a lot from Liam Eddy. Any upperclassman could. Throw the ball over the plate, change speed, see what happens.
Yeah, he's been really, really impressive. And the one time I saw him against Furman, he was fun to watch. They've tried some different people at the third starter, midweek starter when they've needed it, Connor Lungwitz. They went with Tommy Barnhouse yesterday. What are your thoughts on their options for filling out the rest of the rotation?
Well, they've got options. It just depends on who they want to settle on, I suppose. They want Alex Siegel to be a starter at some point, but they're just really being careful with him, easing him back into pitch counts and different types of pitches. Who was out all of last year with arm issues, a kid out of Arizona that they have really high hopes for. Preston Snavely turned in a good midweek start, but then had a rough one against Missouri, so he's in the mix. And you got Lungwitz, of course, who has started a fair amount of games over the last couple of years, who's kind of alternated good and bad when it comes to starting. The thing about Connor is his last two outings out of the pen have been really, really good. So I don't know if you want to mess with that. And now, of course, Tommy Barnhouse started that game on Sunday and turned in four scoreless innings, and he started the season as a closer. So they got some options, but we're getting to a point now in the schedule where we need to see it. So it's going to have to be somebody grabbing a hold of that role, not only in the Sunday game, but the midweek games, because they're going to start coming more consistently too.
And as when they were in the Missouri Valley Conference, these midweek games are going to be important. It's going to be an opportunity to play Oklahoma State and Kansas State, and those are games that can really help the old resume if you can win them. Well, that's the perfect segue into another big factor in this 17-4 start, and that would be the bullpen. You now have the feeling that Wichita State, they're up 4-1 in the fifth, and they call on the bullpen, and good things are going to happen. Clayton McGinnis has really improved a lot. I know Todd Butler has mentioned Keelan Kilgore several times. He's been very good recently. Chandler Sanborn is playing a big role again. How's the bullpen working so well?
Well, they all have seemingly defined roles now. We thought we had that first couple of weeks when Tommy Barnhouse was a closer. But if they've moved on from him and want to see what he looks like as a starter, it seemingly is in good hands with Chandler Sanborn at the very, very end. He's throwing 95, 96, 97 miles an hour, almost two strikeouts an inning. So you just look at the stat sheet and you say, yeah, there's your closer. So you work backwards from there. Clayton McGinnis is up among the nation's leaders in appearances, so you know he's got a durable arm, and he seems to relish coming in with guys on base, and that's kind of an uncommon thing. Everybody would like a clean inning, but he seemingly wants to come in and clean up a mess if necessary, and he's done that very well. And then you've got the other guys that kind of, they have some versatility. You talk about Kilgore, he's a left-handed pitcher. You got Preston Miner, who's a side-arming right-handed pitcher. And once you get, like you said, to the mid-game, if the Shockers have a lead, Todd and Mike can basically just match it up the rest of the way. Not only inning for inning, but sometimes batter to batter, because they have so much depth down there. And every single guy, statistically, has more strikeouts than innings. So they're all swing-and-miss guys in different ways, of course. But to see that many pitchers on one staff have more strikeouts than innings pitched at this late stage of the season is amazing. Only Liam Eddy and Connor Lungwitz don't have more than a strikeout an inning. So you feel like that whoever you go to, even though the roles are pretty well defined, if the game is a runaway, you need guys to get some work, generally it won't get out of hand. The bullpen will keep it right the way it is.
Yeah, the strikeout numbers are really stand out. From a pitcher's perspective, why is it so beneficial to have these defined roles? How does that help their preparation?
Well, routine. You understand during a course of the game when you're expected to pitch. I'm not 100% sold on having to have defined roles at this stage. Back in our day, your role was to get people out until I take the ball from you. There was no real role necessarily besides the closer at Wichita State. But in all seriousness, if these kids have a 100% confidence in when they're going in, when they can start getting loose, predictability goes a long way, especially in baseball. And baseball is not only a game of routine but habit. And if you get into the habit of coming into the game in the seventh inning, or in McGinnis's case, when somebody's on base, he knows to get up and get going, all the better. Now, things happen throughout the course of the year, injuries, slumps, and all that stuff, but the more consistent you can keep it, the better off you're going to be.
Position players have been pretty consistent. This was what we would have thought would be the strength of this team, because you had so many people coming back from last year and the year before. Let's talk a little bit about Grayson Genesta and Alec Bohm, the two guys that got a lot of publicity. They both went to the Cape, played really well. They're talked about as they're going to be, you know, first round draft picks, second round draft picks. They're really on the radar. Put them in a little bit of perspective. You know, recent shockers, Connor and Casey Gillespie, Chris O'Brien, Damon Sublette, guys who put up some big offensive numbers. How do they kind of fit into that whole maybe honor roll of shocker hitters here in recent history?
I think they're unique from those other guys that you talked about. Maybe not necessarily Connor Gillespie because he made it to the big leagues, but I think the numbers are going to start to come with these guys once they leave, if you follow the logic. I think they're very mature and very physical right now, but I think the best years are to come. They will be and have been pitched very carefully, even though they're back-to-back in the lineup. They are not going to sneak up on anybody anymore, like you talked about. And I think that's the big thing that got everybody's attention was that either one of those guys could have won the MVP in the Cape League. Genesta did, Bohm didn't, but they both had very similar seasons in the Cape, and that's against some of the best arms in the country. The best players in the country go to the Cape Cod League and play summer baseball, and those two guys were two of the very best. That's not to say they're not going to help Wichita State win a bunch of games, because I think they will, and they already have, hitting two and three in the order. So as long as they stay healthy, I don't necessarily think that you're going to see either one of them hit 400 like Chris O'Brien did, for example. They'll probably both get to double digits in home runs, but it's how they profile at the next level, I think, is what, you know, they're more than just the quote-unquote good college players. Yeah, they're going to go high in the draft, and they're going to, I would assume, without getting injured, going to go a long way in the game of baseball, but we just might not see it at this level.
When you start talking about the draft, it seems like both have really helped themselves defensively. I think Alec Bohm, well, I noticed tremendous improvement as far as how he moves at third base. And Grayson Genesta, to move from first base to right field to center field, that's really a statement about his athletic ability and defensive ability. That'll help both of them. What kind of improvements have you seen defensively from those two?
Just that. I mean, I had no idea that Genesta could be a everyday center fielder. Apparently he talked his coach in the Cape into letting him try it, and he seemed pretty good at it and natural at it. And I haven't seen him have a bad read on a ball yet. You know, it's looked like he's been playing out there his whole life. Now, Bohm, I think from the very beginning, he was steadfast in wanting to stay a third baseman and remain a third baseman and be a good one. So that, I think, speaks a lot to his work ethic. Not that he's ever been bad over there, but I think a lot of baseball people were waiting for the other shoe to drop to move him over to first base because he's 6'5", and, you know, profile's better over there, especially with a bat. But he's got two errors this year, I think, and I can only remember one of them. And it's not because he doesn't have any range either. You know, it's both of those guys are 1 and 1A when it comes to really being not only a competent defensive player but a really good one.
Yeah, I think it's clear both of them really put in some work to, you know, improve their bodies, to improve their range, their speed, all those kind of things. I'm always very hesitant. You know, I get into these games for free, so I'm hesitant to tell people to, you know, spend their hard-earned money on tickets and things like that. On the other hand, I would it would be regretful if on June 15th, after both these guys go in the, you know, first or second round or whatever, even the fifth round, and people say, well, wow, I didn't know they were that good. I wish I would have seen them play. What's your pitch for a Shocker fan to get out there and maybe appreciate these two guys during the season?
They're two big physical dudes that you don't want to miss their at-bats because of what might happen. If for no other reason than that, you know, the wow factor. They got off to, both of them did, a tremendously hot start, and there were grand slams all over the place. They've already got five, and Bohm has three of them by himself, and you can't expect that every time. But when they come up, you might want to drop what you're doing and pay attention because they're very gifted hitters and very physical. And like you and I talked about, if you're on the All-Star team in the Cape Cod League, these guys shouldn't be sneaking up on you. You should know that they're darn good baseball players, and you like good baseball players, go out and watch them.
Definitely. Young position players, we've seen Paxton Wallace play a little bit here. I think he homered here recently, did he not?
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Gibson's been in the lineup. Is there a young position player who we might see over the course of this season break out a little bit and give us a little hint about what's to come?
Garrett Kosis is a big physical left-hand hitter. He got to play first base on Sunday. That was his first start there. He's normally on the other corner, but they were just trying to get another bat in there, and he had delivered in each of his first two pinch hitting appearances. He reminds me of a young Josh Hamilton. Big, I mean, doesn't look like a freshman. He's a man already, and he can hit the ball a long way. So he's another left-hand bat that Todd Butler has coming off of his bench. Like we talked about earlier, it's tough for those guys to break in, but as we've continued to get through the season, Kosis, Wallace, and Gibson, the guys you're talking about, it speaks to their work ethic and what they do in the cage and what they do, you know, in biding their time. They haven't hung their head, felt sorry for themselves, or moped around a little bit, because you do that, the coaches see it, and you don't get the opportunity to break in. But, yeah, Paxton Wallace has been a right-handed DH against lefties, which I think that should and would continue. And you got a little platoon thing going on in the DH spot if you want to slip Kosis in there when a right-hander's in there. So those are the three guys to keep your eye on.
Shockers head on the road this weekend to start American Athletic Conference play. Of course, that's been a big story throughout about the year. How's this conference going to shake out? How's it compare to the Missouri Valley? All those kind of things. I asked Todd Butler about that on Sunday after the game against Furman, and he is kind of, short summary of the American is, it's going to be a lot of physical players, you know, that kind of similar to Wichita State. You're going to see some big crowds, especially at a place like East Carolina. Baseball is a big deal there. He was excited about it, thinks it'll be, you know, a big challenge and a good move, obviously, for Wichita State. What's your kind of feel about the American and what the Shockers are going to run into over this next few weeks?
Well, I think the fans should readjust their sights just a little bit. You know, Shocker teams in the past would enter Missouri Valley Conference play with one thing on their mind. That was sweep. And I don't think that's a rational type of expectation in a conference like this. You try to do what you can to take two out of three every series. And you do everything you can not to get swept. Getting sweeps are nice, but I think those will be few and far between, just because of what you just said, and the you know, there are at least three first round draft picks on the mound that the Shockers will see, in addition to having two first round types themselves in Boehm and Genesta. But you're gonna be facing certainly the best of the best. UConn's got a first round pick. South Florida's got a first round pick that starting that Friday role. So I think you when Wichita State especially goes on the road, you just think about trying to win a series. You know, the days of going to Evansville and looking for a sweep are probably pretty much over. Memphis is off to a slow start, I've noticed. Tulane is just okay. Houston got off to a slow start, but now they've won eight in a row, I think, at last check. So it'll be an interesting league for sure. But, again, I think if you go into a series thinking sweep, you're in for a rude awakening.
RPI today, the American is fifth nationally. Valley is ninth. Wichita State, you got East Carolina at 12th. Wichita State at 6th. You've got everybody basically in the top 150. Most of them in the top 100, except for Cincinnati, which is 207. Memphis, which is 216. If you were to compare that to the Valley, and the Valley is a good baseball league. I don't mean for any of this to disparage the Valley. The Valley's got 5 schools in the top 100. Evansville bringing up the rear at 252. I guess my thought after looking at the numbers, the Valley has had some teams comparable at the top, with Missouri State and Dallas Baptist being really good to the best in the American. American's probably better, you know, once you get through 4, 5, 6 depth. What's right. Your impression of how these two conferences compare?
I would agree with that assessment. I'm a little surprised to hear that the Valley is off to such a good start RPI-wise, but get with me in about a month and we'll find out where everybody's at. And I think that's probably the difference. You win or lose games in the American, you're not going to have as huge jumps or falls depending on what happens. It would be my overall estimation comparing the American to the Valley. You know, you're not going to get a lot of help as we go through it, or as much, I don't think. And maybe I could be wrong with the Valley, and maybe this year is going to be a good year for the Valley. I don't know, but we'll find out. But I think that, much like basketball, you're not worried about taking a big hit if you lose a league game now as opposed to in the past.
And I think this will be a time where midweek games will really help the American because of the geography. You're going to have to be playing other Florida schools if you're at Central Florida or South Florida. You're going to be playing ACC and SEC schools in the midweek, whereas in the Valley, you're just limited geographically. Much of the conference, you're going to have to be playing MAC schools or Big Ten schools, so the benefits may not be as much. All right, well, Shane, you've got to catch a bus. You've got a long road trip coming up, Conway, Arkansas, and then Greenville, North Carolina. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.